Today we're going to learn Erchin Daf Zayin. We're going to start for a minute at the Mishnah, and then we'll start at the bottom of Vav Amud Bet. But we'll start at the Mishnah in the middle of Vav Amud Bet. Hagoses vayotzei lehareg. You have someone who's about to die and someone who's about to be executed. Lo nidar velo ne'arach. He has no value in terms of if somebody vows his value or someone says Erchin about his value, Erech ploni alai, that you don't have to pay anything because he has no value. He's about to die. Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya Omer, Ne'erach mipnei shedamav ktsuvim. When it comes to Erchin, he's still alive. He's still breathing, so he does have Erchin. So that's the machloka between them. Here comes the confusing part. Rabbi Yossi Omer, now he starts talking about something different. They were talking about if somebody says the value of this person upon them. Rabbi Yossi says, what if he himself makes a vow? Noder, uma'arich, umakdish. His neder is valid, his Erchin is valid, and his hekdesh is valid. Okay, all those things are valid. There, it's not clear. Is he arguing? Did someone disagree? We don't know. They didn't say anything. Ve'im hizik. And all the more so, if he damages someone, let's say he causes damages while he's on his deathbed, or while he's about to be executed. You can imagine him starting to beat up the people on the way to be executed. Chayav, he's liable now. Of course, he can't pay. Who's going to pay? His yorshim, okay, the heirs. So the question is, the Gemara is going to be, okay, we're now skipping down to about 12 lines from the bottom. Rabbi Yossi Omer Noder Umarich. V'tanakama, Mika Amar Delo. Did Tanakama say no? In other words, do we see a machloket here about anything? So what does the Gemara answer? There's going to obviously have to be some machloket, because otherwise it would just be kind of in everyone's name, even though theoretically one could say maybe there isn't, but the Gemara assumes there's a machloket. But they say like this. Nobody thinks that there's a machloket about the first part. Everybody agrees, if someone who's a goses or yotzei le'areg and he makes a vow, his vow is valid. What's the machloket? Ve'im hizik, ki pligi be'im hizik. Okay, the machloket is, if he causes damages, is he liable? What's going to be the machloket? Tanakama savar, im hizik eno chayav betashlumim, ve'Rabbi Yossi savar, im hizik chayav betashlumim. So now, right, one says yes, one says no. So when Rabbi Yossi says chayav, it means Tanakama disagreed and thinks he's patur. So now the question is, what's the root of the machloka? We're going to have two possibilities. Amar Rabbi Yosef, b'milva alpeko v'emina yorshim kam b'flege. The question is, if you have an oral agreement when it comes to a loan, now this isn't a loan, but we learned this in Bechorot, if you have a Torah obligation, okay, the Torah obligates you, like in this case. He caused damages. He's now obligated by the Torah. According to some, that's viewed as a milva alpeh, which means an oral loan. Which means, now, what's the difference between an oral loan and a written loan? The written loan, first of all, you can collect from yechasim mishu'abadim, lien property. Milva alpeh, oral, did I say it right? Right? Yeah. Written, you can collect from yechasim mishu'abadim. Oral, you cannot. Okay. Another thing they're going to say now is there's a machloket about can you collect from the heirs if it's a milva alpeh. Milva b'shtar, obviously you can. The machloket between them is milva alpeh. So number one, you have to assume damages that the Torah obligates you in are considered milva alpeh. And then the debate's going to be milva alpeh, are you chayav, are you govem in a yorshim or lo? So Rav Yosef says, "B'milva alpeh, that's their machloket. Govem and ayorshim kamiflege. Tanakama, who exempts, savar milva alpeh eino govem and ayorshim. He says you can't be govem from yorshim and milva alpeh, and that's why he's patur. Rabbi Yosef savar milva alpeh govem and ayorshim. You can collect it from the heirs. Rava, and some people say it's Rava Amar, de kule alma milva alpeh eino govem and ayorshim. Everybody agrees that a milva alpeh can't be collected from yorshim." That can't be what the machloket's about. Hacha b'milva ktuva b'torah kamiflege. Their whole debate is, how do we view, and we saw the same debate in Bechorot, how do we view a milva that's written by the Torah, meaning how do we view a Torah obligation? If you're chay of mamon from the Torah, Torah obligates you to pay, is that viewed as a milva alpeh, or is it viewed as a milva b'shtar? So, Tanakama, who exempts, is going to hold Savar Milva Haktuva B'Torah Lav Kichtuva B'Shtar Damya. Okay, they call it a loan. It's not a loan that's written in the Torah. They mean a Torah obligation. Something the Torah obligates you to pay is not as like it's written in a shtar, which means, right, it's going to be like a Milva Alpeh, which means you can't be Govem in a Yorshim, and that's why he exempts. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Kechtuva B'Shtar Damiya. It's as if it's written by B'Shtar, and that's why he obligates you. Okay, so the first way of reading this whole thing is that there's a machlok at Rabbi Yosef and Rabbah about our Mishnah, about what the debate between Rabbi Yossi and Tanakama is, even though it doesn't say they debate anything. The assumption is they have a debate if someone's about to get killed, are they chayav or not? Now, we're going to say that some people say this machlok at Rabbi Yosef and Rabbah is what we said it was, but it wasn't said about our Mishnah, it was said about a different source. Okay, Ika demane laha, some people say it was said about the Tosefta and Bava Kama. In the Tosefta, now it really talks about the same case, but it has a bit of a different twist it adds to it. In the end, it's going to kind of come out the same, but it's going to be that their debate was about this and not about our Mishnah. Hayotzei lehareg, someone's about to get executed. Hu shechava ba'achirim, chayav. If he damages other people, he's obligated. That's what we saw Rabbi Yossi says in our Mishnah. Achirim shechavlu bo, but if other people injure him, they're p'turim. Why are they p'turim? Because we've talked about this before. They're someone called Ein Lo Damim. He's got no value. He's about to be executed. He's got no value. So there's no actual problem beating him up because nothing on his body is worth anything. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Af hu im chava ba'achirim patur. If he damages other people, he's also exempt. Why is that? Shelo nitan l'chazarat amidat beitin. He's about to be executed. We can't exactly bring him to trial right now. Why not? Because we have something called Inui Hadin. What is Inui Hadin? According to Torah law, if you can sentence someone to death, you have to execute them immediately because otherwise it's torture for them, right? It's unfair to them. Okay, we're actually going to talk about this. Two different reasons given as to why this is. The Rama with a hay, not Rama with an olive. The Rama with a hay was a posek from Sfarad in the time of the Rishonim. He says, he has a commentary on Sanhedrin. He says in Sanhedrin there that the reason is Mishun va'ahavta l'rayacha kamocha. And if you remember, we learned in the Gemara there, bror lo mitayafa, right? You have to give them the quickest death. Right? We don't want to prolong anything. We don't want to make it a long death. We don't want to also make it that we're delaying the death. So it comes from that. You have to treat someone appropriately even when they're deserving of death.
There's no concept of death row.
Right. And then, right, it's very interesting. We're going to see a few things, how they compare to capital punishment in general in the world nowadays. Okay, we'll see a really interesting halacha coming up in the next Mishnah, which actually is totally different from the way almost every single country who has the death penalty deals with it. The second option is that it has nothing to do with torturing the person and we don't want to, you know, torture him. It has to do with ubi'arta haha mikirbecha. You have to quickly uproot evil. So if you have someone who's obligated to be, you know, should be executed, you got to get rid of him so he doesn't cause more damage. Okay? So, now the Gemara says, so it sounds like here the machloket is, can you bring him to Dean or not, right? Because Tanakama said, if you bring him, if he's chaval ba'achirim, he's chayav. According to Rav Shimon Elazar, you can't be v'chayiv him because lo nitan l'chazarat amidat beitin. So now the Gemara says, wait a minute. So now you're going to assume michal de Tanakama savar nitan l'chazarat amidat beitin? How could they possibly hold that ma'anim et hadin and we bring him back to trial? How could you possibly say that? There's no way. So, what does the Gemara say? So here we get to now come in, okay, take the sugya from before, copy and paste it into here. Now we get, oh no, really the machloket is either what Rav Yosef said or what Rabbah said about the machloket, which is, I'm Rav Yosef, b'milva al pegovem and a yorshim kamifle. Nobody actually thinks, and here it's interesting, that we're going to bring him back on to court to deal with this. What are we going to do? We're going to bring his yorshim to court. And here it's interesting, right? Nowadays, if you want to judge someone, they have to actually show up in court. In those days, it sounds like you could theoretically do judgment without the Baal Din being there because he's obviously dead. No one thinks that you're Ma'amid Oto B'Beit Din, but you're going to bring, you know, two witnesses. As long as two witnesses say so, well, then we can obligate him even if he's not in court to make any claim for himself. So Amar of Yosef and Milval Pegovim and Ayorshim Kamiflege. Okay, now we know what he's going to say because we saw this already. The machloket is that can you be gover from the Yorshim a Milval Pen? Meaning the Torah obligates him to pay, but that Torah obligation is only a status of Hava Val Pe. And the machloket becomes can you be gover Hava Val Pe from the heirs? Tanakama Savar Milva Alpeh Govem and Ayorshim. In this case, it's the flip. It's Tanakama who says you're Chayav, and Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Sover Eino Govem and Ayorshim. Right? He says you're Patur because we can't be Govem from the Yorshim. It's obviously a bit of a difficulty because it says in the Tosefta, Avuhu Chaval Ba'Achirim Patur Shiloni Tan L'Chazaran Amida Beitin. Like they're kind of ignoring that line. Okay, but it's a bit of a problem. Rabba Amar, and maybe that's the reason why some people don't think that this machloket was said about this sugya, because it doesn't really make so much sense. But again, as the Gemara points out, there's a problem to say that Tanakama isn't worried about Inui Hadin. Okay? Maybe when we get to the end of the sugya, I'll suggest a different reason as to why maybe Tanakama wouldn't be worried about Inui Hadin here. Rabba Amar de Kule Alma Milva Alpe Eino Govem and Ayorshim. Everybody agrees Milva Alpe can't be collected from the heirs. The whole machloket is, if it's written in the Torah, is it like it's written in Shtar? Meaning, the Torah obligates you to pay. Does that mean it's like it's written in Shtar? Tanakama Sabar, Kich Tuva B'Shtar Damia, and therefore the heirs are obligated. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Sabar, Lav Kich Tuva B'Shtar Damia, and therefore he's not obligated. Okay, now the Gemara is going to bring a very, I call this creative case, that comes up in a Braita, or I actually didn't look up the source. Yes, and it's in a Braita. Meitive. Hachofer bor b'reshut harabim. Somebody's digging a pit in Reshut Arabim, and what happens? Nafal alav shor v'harago. While he's digging his bor, now remember, someone who digs a bor in Reshut Arabim is liable. You're not allowed to dig a pit in the middle of Reshut Arabim. While he's digging his pit, comes the shore falls on him, v'harago, and kills him. Okay? So, patur. Okay? Who's patur? The owner of the shore is patur from having killed, because his shore killed the balabor, because it was really the balabor's fault for digging the pit. Okay? That's not so important for our purposes, but the lo'od ela, but all the more so, she'imet ha'shor, what if the shore dies by falling in the bor? Now, generally, what do you say? Balabor is chayav if the shore gets killed. So, imet ha'shor, yorshe balabor chayavim l'shalem demei shor l'balav. Okay, the yorshim of the balabor have to pay the value of the shore. Now, what do you see here? You see here that
he's liable.
And what did it's actually, sorry, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. This goes against Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who said im hu chaval b'achirim is patur. Here, he damaged someone, and we're obligating him. How could you do that, right? Harei lo nitan l'chazarat amidat beiti. So Amar Rabbi Ila, Amar Rav, kisha amab bedin. Okay, it's a case where he was brought to Dean before he died. Okay, now, right, sorry, it doesn't really relate to Lepisha Nolaitan L'Chazaran Amidah Beit Din. It has to do with, can you obligate Yorshim in an obligation? Right, so if you say it's like a Milval Peh, and a Milval Peh ain't no government on Yorshim, then how could you say that you're, so what do they say? It's actually where they already did Ha'amada Bedin. In that case, if they did Hamad Abedin and they obligated him, then you can already be Govet, because that turns it into a Milva Bishtar. Okay? So now they say, wait a minute. The case was that he died from the shore falling on top of him. How could they have possibly brought him to court? So what do they answer? Vahara Gokatani, right? It says he got killed. So how could he possibly have been stood up in court and been brought to court? What happened? Well, the shore fell in, knocked him out, right? He was like half conscious or something. He was able to be brought to court to be judged, but he died shortly thereafter. Okay? So now we have this weird case where, again, you have a guy digging a pit, the shore falls in, almost kills him, right? He's like about to die from it, but he's still somewhat alive. He lasts another few days. In the interim, also the shore died from the fall. So they bring him to court. They obligate him while he was still alive. Then it becomes a milva b'shtar, and a milva b'shtar, everyone agrees, can be collected from his heirs. And that's how we answer the question. But then they say, wait a minute. Bahama Rav Nachman, Tane Chaga, Chaga taught this source. His version said, Meit ukvaho. He died and got buried on the scene. In other words, he got buried in the bor. The shore fell into the pit, and maybe the shore crumbled, right, the whole bor crumbled on top of him, and he gets buried in the pit, in which case, obviously, he wasn't alive a little bit longer for them to judge him. So what's the answer? B'hilchata, it's actually a strange lashon, they use hilchata, diyatve dayane apuma debira. There happened to be chachamim, dayanim, sitting, okay, if you thought this case was creative, and now it gets a bit more creative, they were sitting on the edge of the board, they watched the whole thing happen before,
while he illegally died.
Like a few seconds before he kind of gets buried underneath and is fully dead, they judge him, he becomes obligated, milva b'shtar, to pay the owner the money, therefore the heirs have to pay the money, and that's how we answer the question against Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, who would say that you would be obligated.
What happened to the careful reading of the word ha'amido, which means actually being able to stand up,
okay,
which we've seen?
So that's something different. That's when it comes to haracha. That's when it comes to turning something from hektesh and redeeming it. And that's ve'hamido, ve'hericho. That's a whole different, that's a drasha from a pasuk. So there we're very careful about he has to stand up. Hamad ha'medin, we don't view that you actually have to stand up. Look, we just said it sounded like earlier you can judge someone without him even being there.
Right.
So therefore it sounds like you don't necessarily need to, but you need him alive. Okay? Tanu Rabbanan. Now we have another interesting case about someone who's about to die and Inui Hadin. So again, our topic was, one side topic we were talking about was Inui Hadin. You can't push off, if someone's obligated death penalty, you can't push it off. Again, we saw two reasons. One was because of the person himself, and one was because of the Bi'ar Tahara Mikirbecha. We want this person out of the world as soon as possible. So here comes a bright. Hayotze lehareg, mazin alav midam chatato midam hashamo. He's about to die, but his korban, in other words, they take him out to be killed, but he's in the middle of sacrificing a korban, so we allow him, if he's got he did something else wrong besides being obligated the death penalty, but now they sprinkle on him his dam, the blood, not on him, sorry, they sprinkle the blood of the chatat, of the asham, to provide him with atonement before they kill him. Chataba otasha'a, but if as they're about to take him out to be murdered, to be executed, he does something wrong, okay, I think Rashi says it like he eats chalev or something, okay, where he's obligated a korban chatat, know exactly how he's doing that on his way, but let's say. So you're not allowed, Einis Kakinla, we don't allow him to bring his korban. So the Gemara says, my taima, Amar of Yosef, Mipne She'im Anin et Dino. So now we get back to Inui Hadin because we don't want to allow him, right? We don't want to push off the judgment. It's right now again, it becomes a question here. If it's not fair to him, then you would think, well, maybe if it's the issue of Bi'ar Tahara Mikirbecha, then we understand. We don't give him time to do his own korban. But if it's a matter of him getting atonement for the sin he did before he gets executed, maybe he would say, I'd rather wait and get kapara, but they don't allow it anyway. Okay, so first of all, it strengthens the other opinion that maybe it has to do with the Bi'ar Tahara Mikirbecha. But really, most people think Inui Hadin is really for the person. So it's interesting in light of that, even though you would think that we allow him the choice, we don't. So now they say, Ihachi afilu reshanami. Well, if Ema aninadino, then why do we allow him? Why do we allow them to sprinkle the blood of his chatat or asham before they execute him? Right? Remember we said, if he sinned right then, we don't let him, but if he was already in the middle of his korban, we allow it. So what's the answer? Kigon shaya zivcho zavuach bo tasha'a. The first case was they were already in the middle of it, and all you have left to do is to sprinkle the blood. That's very quick. But if you have to start sacrificing the animal and doing all the talichim, that's already long. Aval ein zibcho zavuach, low, right? So now they're going to say, wait. Aval ein zibcho zavuach mai, low? So then you're going to say what? If you didn't yet start the sacrifice, no. Well, then, if that's the case, that's what it should have said in the source here. It should have said, Aditane, since it says, Chataba otasha enis kakin lo, liflo velitni bedida. Bamed varim amurim shaya zevach zavuach botasha, aval ein zevach zavuach lo. They're basically saying, if the difference between the resha and the seifa is, were you in the middle of already, you already did all those parts except for the zrikat adam, versus had you not started, well, that's what it should have said in that source. It should have said very clearly. Why did it say, if you're chataba otasha'a, if that's not really the issue? The issue is, did you already start or did you not? And that's, again, that becomes a time issue. How much time do you need to do this? It's not really Inui Hadin if all you have to do is sprinkle the blood. But if you have other things to do, then no. So they say, actually, hachinami kamar. That's really what the source meant. It really meant to say like this. When we allow you to do it, it's when you already sacrificed. Bota sha'a. Aval ein zevach zevuach na'asah kemi shechatah bota sha'a ve'ein nizkakin lo. But if he didn't already do his sacrifice, then he's as if he sinned at that moment, and we don't allow it. Okay. So what I wanted to suggest, and I want to go back to where we saw before, let me try to remember where. I wanted to suggest that maybe this issue of the Yorshim, one second, had to do with, right, that maybe, he says, whereas Tanakama says, your chayav, right? Why would he say your chayav? Maybe he says your chayav because we allow ha'amada bebeitin. There's a different interpretation that the Gemara gives. But maybe we allow it because maybe he prefer, again, if you give the person the choice, if you think about it that way, maybe he prefer to have the choice to be judged before, maybe he wants to exonerate his name before he gets killed. Maybe he would choose that, and that would override Ino Hadid.
Except the death row.
Right, exactly. Except that this is for some other sin. This is for some other issue, right. Okay. Okay, Mishnah. Here comes a really interesting issue, which, like I said, I already told you this before. We're going to get to the sugya where it goes against what almost every single country in the world does in terms of capital punishment. Haisha sheyatza lehareg. Here you have a woman who's about to be executed, but she's pregnant. So what do you do? Ein mamtinin la'ad sheteled. Because of this inyoy hadin, we don't wait until she gives birth. Okay? So I looked it up, and it says what I found online, that almost every country, it's illegal to execute a pregnant woman. And the countries go in two ways, okay? There's a split. Either you say, we're going to just delay till after she has the baby, because they feel like it's unfair to penalize the baby because of the mother. Or they say, we're going to instead turn it into a life sentence, okay? Instead of executing her, which is interesting, because if the whole issue is she's a pregnant woman, but maybe the issue is they don't want to separate the mother from the child once the child's born, so therefore they turn it into a life sentence rather than, okay, so some say we wait to execute her till after, and some say it's a life sentence. But in halacha, we say we don't care.
So
okay?
Does it matter where the pregnancy she is, like first trimester?
So it doesn't seem to matter. We say we execute her no matter what, except for the next case is Hayisha Sheyashva Ala Mashber. If she's in labor, then already we allow it. Okay, Mamtinin La Achetelet. Okay? The reason is, this is based on Ubar Yerech Imo. We generally say there's a machlok at Tanaim. Do we say Ubar is Yerech Imo, meaning what, while the fetus is still inside, we view it as an extension of the mother. So if the mother's obligated in the death penalty, then the Vlad is also obligated in the death penalty. Rabbeinu Tam explains that even if you say Ubar Lav Yerech Imo, that's for other laws. But when it comes to this, where the life of the child is taluy in the life of the mother, and we call her not alive anymore because she's supposed to be executed. So therefore, since the life of the child, no matter what, even if you say Ubar is an independent entity, it's still its life sustenance is the mother. And since the mother is deserving of death and basically doesn't really have life in her anymore, then we don't view the Vlad as basically being separate for this issue. It's a very interesting sugya, very hard to swallow. Especially in light of the fact that there's said there were two countries that I never heard of that that actually have this St. Kitts and Nevis.
I think that's one country.
So it said two countries, but then it said St. Kitts and Nevis, and yeah, I wasn't so clear on it.
St. Kitts and Nevis is one
country.
A bunch of islands.
Okay. So anyway.
Did they have that same law in the book?
What?
They have
they have the law that you can execute a pregnant woman, according to their law, but no one else. So, okay. Anyway, very interesting. Hayisha sheneherga, now we have a different issue. A woman that gets killed, nehenim b'sa'ara. You can benefit, okay, generally we say a mate is asur b'hana'a. Anyone who dies is asur b'hana'a, any human. As opposed to animals, what do we say? A nevela is mutar b'hana'a, right? You're like, kelev tashlichun oto. You can give it to your dog. You can benefit. But a woman who's dead, you can't, but you can benefit from her hair. But an animal that gets killed, this is not right, an animal that dies is mutarbana, but if it's obligated in the death penalty, then it's asurbana because of the death penalty. Okay, so let's go back to our first case. So the Gemara says, pshita. Isn't this obvious, even though maybe it's not so obvious? It was obvious to them. I mean, to them. It was interesting to wonder if things changed. Maybe in the world at that time, everybody did this. And one would think so based on this. Gufahi, right? They isn't, right? The ubar is just part of the guf of the woman. So they say, itzrik. No, you need it. Why? You might have thought, because it says in the case where two men are fighting and they attack a pregnant woman and she loses her baby, so you have to pay money to the husband of the pregnant woman. Why is that? Because you view the fetus as the financial property of the husband. So maybe here you'd say, yes, the woman's obligated in death, but maybe financially the husband, right, essentially may turn this into mamono, even though it's really life. Mon debalu, velo lifts a demine, we can't let him lose the value of his fetus, of his unborn baby. Ka mashmalan, therefore, comes to teach you, no, despite that you might have thought that it wasn't so obvious, but now we're telling you that's the halacha. So then they say, Ve'ema hachanami, maybe really it is mamona the bala, maybe we should save the fetus. Amar Rabbi Abau, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, so where do we learn it from? Amar kra, umetu gam shnehem, lerabota tavlat. This is a very strange proof they bring. It's about a no'ef and a no'efet, okay, people who have adultery. It says, Ki imatze ish shochevim isha b'ulat bal, umetu gam shnehem, and they both, right, they both should be killed. Now, first of all, once it says umetu, you don't need both of them. Metu is plural. It could have just said umetu. And it also says, ha'isha shochevim ha'isha ve'ha'isha. Now, it already spells it out. So what do you need the word shnehem? Why is it a strange proof? Because in that case, the vlad presumably was also made from the union of this man and woman. Not necessarily, but right, it could be from her husband because she's married. But it could be from them, and maybe that's why. But in any case, they learn from here the extra word shnehem, that teaches you. Lirabot et havlad, to include the vlad, meaning if she gets the death penalty for being an adulteress, then also her vlad gets killed with her if she's pregnant. Then they say, wait a minute, that word shnehem, we have a different drasha from it. Hamabayle, ad shiu shnehem shavim. Divrei Rabbi Yoshia. Rabbi Yoshia says that teaches us they both have to be gdolim. Let's say someone who is a gadol slept with someone who is a ktana, or someone who is a katan slept with someone who is a gdola. Then it's not, they don't both get the death penalty. So what did they say? Ah, ki ka'amarta migam. No, the drasha was from gam, not from shnehem. Okay. So then that's how they learn it, and not from, right, and that's the source, basically, for saying that the vlad gets killed with the mother. Yashvala mashper. Now, if she's about to have the baby, then we allow the baby to be born. Mai taima, kevan de akar gufa achrinahu. At that point, he's already considered its own separate entity. Amar Yehuda Amar Shmuel. Haisha yotza lehareg. This is a really strange halacha. She's about to get killed, and she's pregnant, so what do we do? Do we kill her, and with that the vlad will get killed, or do we try to first kill the vlad? Very strange. So, makin ota kenege beit harayon. We first smack her right where the, sounds terrible, where the fetus is, to kill the fetus first. Kadesh yamit havlad tchila, this is really weird. Kadesh lo tavo lidei nivul. Okay, so it won't be disgusting. What might happen? Well, if you kill her and the vlad is still alive, maybe the baby will be born, and you'll end up with this very unpleasant. First of all, we talk about bizayon hamet, like it'll be a big disgrace for her. There'll be blood, there'll be a fetus coming out, like the whole thing will be really disgusting. Yeah, the whole graphics of this is really unpleasant. So because of that, they say, therefore, kill the fetus first so that you won't have that whole disgusting encounter, right? And really, I think they're worried about nivul of the woman, okay? Which is always interesting that they're still worried about disgracing a dead body even once, you know, they're obligated of death, and they're
stoning is no less evil than
A fetus falling out in the middle and blood gush. I mean, look, blood will gush anyway in other cases of death, but I guess it's because of where the blood is coming from. It's not so. No, I think just they were concerned about the whole situation. So now they say, wait a minute. This is assuming that what lememra dehi kadma umeta bereisha. Okay, now they have a whole debate about. Or a whole discussion about if you kill a woman who's pregnant, is she going to die first or is the fetus going to die first? Okay, this presumes that if you would kill the woman, the fetus wouldn't die right away, the fetus would die after. V'ha kaimalan divlad mayit bereisha. We have a source that seems to indicate that the vlad dies first. How so? Ditznan, there's a Mishnah. Tinok ben yomo nochel umanchil. A tinok who's one day old if his mother dies when he's 1 day old, so he gets her nachala. Let's say the woman has no other children. So what will happen to her possessions? Well, if it goes to the baby and then the baby dies, I'm assuming it's nochel umanchil. He can inherit the mother at a day old. And then from there, what's going to happen to the possessions? It will go to, let's say, his father has other sons. It'll go to his sons. We're going to read this right now. V'amar Rav Sheshet, what does it mean? Nochel b'nechsei ha'em lahanchil la'achim min ha'av. Okay, now if she didn't have any offspring, what would happen? It would go to her family. Okay, her family would inherit her possessions. So therefore, they say, Atinak ben yomo nochel umanchil, and therefore it ends up to his achim min ha'av. So now, what does this presume? Davka ben yom achad, aval ubar lo. But if it was just an ubar, no. Now, what does that presume? Well, if it was an ubar and the ubar outlives the mother, then the ubar would have gotten the property. So the fact that it doesn't go to the ubar and it only goes to a ben yomo, not an ubar, that seems to, again, it doesn't say that, but we assume, since it said ben yomo, it means ubar not, which means that the ubar must die before the mother. Okay? Dahave mayit bereisha. And he can't, you know, once he's dead, before the mother dies, he doesn't get to get Yerusha while he's dead. So therefore, it will go to her inheritors. What do you want to ask?
Oh, but if they wait until 30 days, is it even considered by?
Yes, so they say for this purpose, it is. That's the whole chidush here, that it is for that purpose. Okay? So now they say, okay, so now this presumes that the ubar is going to die first. So now what are they going to obviously distinguish between a woman who dies versus a woman who's executed? I did vlad zutra chiyute, because it has such little life in it, right? And his life is dependent on its mother. When the malach ha-mavet comes and kills the mother, right? Natural causes, we're going to assume, right? I think the way they view it is like this. A woman's going to die from, let's say, weakness. Now, what's the weakest part of her body? The vlad. So the vlad's going to die first, and then she's going to die. But neherga, when they execute her, he made tabareisha. Okay? So she's going to die first. So now they say, wait a minute. Have uvda. If you want to say this is true, well, let's try to see from reality, right? They're trying to prove it from halachic sources about nahala and all that. But what about reality? There was a case that happened where the mother died, natural causes. Uparkis atzla perkuse. And the child did three, convulsions. Thank you. So what did they say? Oh, that doesn't prove anything. We've seen this many times. Just like the tail of a lizard will still keep moving. It doesn't really mean that the ubar or the fetus was still alive. It just means, right, it could still, while it's detached and can't live, isn't going to make it anyway, it could still convulse. That doesn't show real signs of life. Okay. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel. Hayisha sheyashva al hamashber. Now we have another halacha. A woman who is about to die, who's in the middle of childbirth, umeta, and she dies bishabbat, so she's basically dying on the birthing table. Mibiim sakin umekarinik kresamosi and tavlad. Even though it's Shabbat, we can bring a sakin. Right, we can basically do a C-section, open up her, right, bring a sakin, bring a knife, open up her insides, and take out the vlad. So the Gemara says, pshita, my avid, mechatech basaru. It's like cutting a piece of meat. Like, you can cut a piece of meat on Shabbat, no issue with that. You're not even doing any iser. So what's the chidush? Amarabba, lo nitzricha, lehavis sakin derech reshut harabim. They needed to tell you that if you had no knife, you'd be allowed to bring a knife from Rashud Arabim, which is Isur Hotza'ah, right? Bring something from Rashud Arabim to Rashud Yachid. So one of the Lama Tet Melechot, we allow you to do that. Okay, well still, what's that teaching you? That we don't really know if the Vlad's going to make it, but we allow you to be Mechal Shabbos, Safek Pikuach Nefesh. Well, we have a very famous source that we know about Pikuach Nefesh on Shabbat. Tanina, Mishnafla Lav Mapolet. If an avalanche falls on top of someone, safek hu sham, safek eino sham, and you're not sure, right? We've had cases like this in our lives where, right, all the rubble, and you don't know, are people there? Are they not there? You don't know. Safek chai, safek made. If they are there, you don't know if they're alive or you don't know if they're dead. Safek na'ani, safek Israel. You don't know if it's a Jew or it's a non-Jew. It's one of those difficult issues that for a non-Jew, you're not allowed to be mechalel Shabbat. So, all those things are sfekot, mifakhin alavatagal. We allow you on Shabbat anyway to go through the rubble and find the person. So, we already know, safek pikuach nefesh, this is allowed. So, of course, you should be allowed to do this for the vlad. Maybe he'll live. So, now they're going to distinguish. Ma'u detema hatam u'dahava lechazaka dechiyuta. In that case, he was already alive to begin with. So, there's a chezkat chayim. Aval hacha delo havelecheska dechiyuta. This blood has never even lived life at all. So maybe you would have thought, right? Meikara, from the beginning, he never had life yet. Emalo, maybe you would have thought, only if there's cheska chayim do we allow safek pikuach nefesh to allow us to be doches Shabbat. But kamash malan, that even in this case where the blood never actually, you know, lived outside the womb, we still allow mishum safek pikuach nefesh. You couldn't have learned from that case, and that's why they say it here. Okay. Next case, ha'isha she'neherga. If she's killed, her hair is mutar b'hana'ah. V'amai, isurei hana'ah ninu. Right? How could that be? It's isur hana'ah. It's part of her body, and her body parts are forbidden b'hana'ah, again, because any dead person, their body parts are forbidden b'hana'ah. So amarav, be'omeret, tnu sa'ari lebiti. It's a case where before she died, she said, I want you to give my hair to my daughter. So now they say, that shouldn't help anyway. If hair is considered body parts. So now the Gemara says like this. If she said, give my arm to my daughter, would they allow it? It's also a sor v'hana. So why would it help to say tnu sari? So amar av, bipe anochrit. Ah, it's talking about her wig, where it's not actually part of her hair. Yes, so the Gemara is going to say, Tama damru tnu. Wait, but then that makes no sense to say her wig, because what did Rav say? It's only if she said, give my wig to my daughter. But if she didn't say, give my wig to my daughter, it would be forbidden, right? Halo amratnu, gufahi umitza, what, you're going to say it's part of her body and it's forbidden? And if you would, v'hame baile le Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, this was a question Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina asked. And if it was so clear the answer from this source, from our Mishnah, right, again, this goes back to something we saw just the other day, if the answer to this was very clear, then he wouldn't have been left with a question. So what's the question? Debai Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, say arna shinsid kaniyot mahu. Okay, this sounds very strange, but you have to understand what they're talking about. Irani dachat, the whole city goes and worships Avodah Zarah, so the people are all killed, and right, they're killed with, I think it's saif, by the sword, and the stuff in the, I think it's a machloket actually, where they get saif or chenek, and everything in the city is burned, all the possessions. So now, if there's nashinsid kaniyot in the city, they get saved. Actually says, interestingly, they have to go at Arumim, because all their possessions have to be burned. So then they say, oh, it doesn't really mean Arumim, it just means with only the clothes that they have on their bodies, okay? It doesn't mean totally naked, it means with whatever's basic to their body. So now the question becomes, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina asked, what about Pe'anuch, the Amar Rava, Rava said about Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, who asked about the, oh, sorry, he asked about the Se'ar, the hair of Nashim Tzikaniyah, what do we do with it? So Rava said there, we're obviously not talking about their hair, right? But they're talking about pe anuch rit kamibayale. There's a bunch of different nuskaot here, what it is, and there's a bunch of different ways of understanding it, but I'm going to go with one interpretation here. The question was about a wig. Their wigs, is that considered their levush or not? Okay? So now they're going to say, if that's the case, then they could have learned it from here, right? Because they could have said, it's considered, if she says tnu, then you give it to the daughter, but otherwise, it sounds like it's going to be forbidden b'hana'ah. So that means the pe'ah is considered part of her body, which means in the Yirani Dacha case, she'd be allowed to go with her wig on her head. So if really it was talking about wigs, then Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina wouldn't have this question, again, according to Rabbi's reading of it, that it was about a pe'ah nechuit. So what do they answer? Oh, no. The reason why he didn't have an answer, Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, was not because he was talking about a wig that was on her head. What was he talking about? He came by the Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina to tali besichta, about a wig that was hanging on a peg in her house. Okay? Hacha de mechaber ba, but here, in other words, there was a question, how do we view it? But here that it was attached to her head, tam adam ratnu, halo am ratnu gufihi umitzar. But here when it's attached to her head, it depends whether she said tnu or not. Then, if it's attached to her body, we're going to say it's part of her body, unless she said tnu, and if she said tnu, then we're going to assume that we can separate it from her body. Okay, it's a little strange, this whole reading, and in fact, Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak is going to say, what a strange reading, that it's talking about a wig, doesn't, right? And here's going to be his obvious question. Kashalet Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak, v'hadumiyah debehemah katani. Look at the Mishnah, it said, presumably it means the behemah and, right, well, it's hair also. Now, behemoth don't wear wigs. So, basically he's going to say it should be just like a behemah. Mahatam gufe, afachanami gufe, right? So, el amar Rav Nachman, zomi tata osarta, vizog mardin osarta. Okay, Rav Nachman comes and says, it really is talking about hair, and what's the issue? Well, with a woman, what caused her to be asur bahana? I said this when we learned the Mishnah. It's the fact that she died, okay? But when it comes to the animal, it's gemardin osarta. It's the, so therefore, when it comes to the woman, if she says tnu, then we can separate it because it's just, it's death that causes it. And if she says, give it to my daughter, then it's okay. But if it's, the animal, well, the animal dying doesn't do anything. It's the gemardin. So because gemardin, we're going to say gemardin basically creates this isur hana'ah on the entire animal. So now they're going to say tani levi kavatei derav and tani levi kavatei derav nachum bar yitzchak. We're going to have two braitot that Levi brought. One supports Levi's Rav's understanding. One supports Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak's understanding. Tani levi kavatei derav ha'isha shiotza lehareg ba'amra tnu sari lebiti notnim meta ein notnim. So the Gemara says, Pshita, isn't this obvious about this Braita? So they say, Ela shenuyei hamet asur bahana. So you know, the chiddush is that the noy of hamet, in other words, something decorative, not part of the body, but something external, that shows it's a pe'an achuit. Tani kavatei d'Rav Nachum bar Yitzchak, ha'isha shemeta nehenim b'sa'ara, behema shenerga asura bahana. Uma hefresh ben zeh lezeh, the difference between them, actually I made a mistake when I said it just before. I said it has to do with the daughter and the tnu. No, according to this interpretation, it has nothing to do with the daughter saying tnu or not. It's just hair of a woman is considered not part of the body because it's death that does it, and the hair is considered a separate part of the body. But when it comes to gemardin, that becomes takef across the board. Okay, that kind of affects everything, even the se'ar. Hadron alacha kol arichin. Done with the parak. We'll start with the new parak tomorrow.
But here we're talking only about a woman who is guilty of something. In other words, if somebody dies, you can't have hana from their goof. Otherwise, there will be a problem with organ donation. Even though they're donating.
Right, so have to deal with the organ. The truth is, no, a regular person who dies is a sorba hana. So organ donation must be some heter, right? Or
kept alive.
I forget how it all works, right? They, exactly.
No, never. They're kept alive, I think, officially.
So that's why. Yeah, I don't remember how it works to be Surah Na'a, but a body of a maid is generally a Surah Na'a.